Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
We are back talking today about the disability rights on the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dave Miller. Emily Harris is away to join the conversation with your experience or your questions. You can go to our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. We're joined now by Emily Holmes, who works for the Oregon Youth Authority. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, you live with a number of different mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes. I have, first off, Tourette's syndrome. And it's interesting because technically, yes, it is a mental disability, but I consider it a physical disability because it's controlled by my brain, but it affects me physically. So I make random noises and movements that I can't control. I also have obsessive compulsive disorder, ADHD, short-term memory dysfunction, and processing disorder, which has to do with how my brain takes in and understands information and how my brain sort of gives me the information to explain to other people, to communicate to other people.
When did the subject of your disabilities come up when you were applying for your current job?
So I was in my second interview for the job. And mom! I had some tics at the beginning of the interview, and I just explained, I have Tourette's, it's no big deal, and everything was fine. Then at the end of the interview, they asked me if there was anything that I would like to tell them, anything else I wanted to tell them. And I said, I said, this is going to surprise you, but I wanted to let them know that I had obsessive compulsive disorder. And the reason is because I think filing is fun. I enjoy alphabetizing. I love to organize things. I like taking a big mess and cleaning it up. I just think that's a lot of fun, and I think that that is what sold them on hiring me.
Have you had conversations about accommodations, about changing the work environment in some way at your current job?
I have a tape recorder that, because of the short-term memory dysfunction and the processing disorder, when I take meeting minutes, it can be very challenging, although taking meeting minutes I know is challenging for anybody. So I have the tape recorder so I can listen back. I'd say that really I don't have any, like, accommodations at work, as in maybe a special type of software on my computer, that kind of thing. I'd say the biggest thing is just making sure that people understand what's going on and, saying, hey, you know what, this is how Emily communicates sometimes. You know, you may have to wait a little bit longer for her to explain. She may need to take some extra time to think about what she's trying to say before she actually explains it,
I'm going to interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay.
A broadsword, a three-piece dive show, high-end fixed blades.
No, forget all those,
And your wildlife.
Forget all those. Look at the meat and the sandwich.
Exactly.
That's where the deal is. That's why this one has taken it to a level unseen in the past.
Now, here's...
Then it is 19 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of September. In the year of, I can't even really do it. I'm trying to replicate the Tourette's thing, and it doesn't want to. I need a Tourette's soundboard. See, you actually do it pretty well. If you told me right now that you had Tourette's, if you told me that this whole time you've just sort of been masking it with medication and in training, I think I'd buy that. With me, I just. I don't think I have the raw talent for spontaneity that it takes to really feign an affliction of Tourette's. Did I ever tell you this? All right, let's stop right now. I got to get a hold of myself. I don't have Tourette's. I'm just unfocused. I'll get back to the Tourette's girl in a second. Because there's something, there's sort of a little a coda to that. There's a sort of an epilogue to that whole business of you. You didn't bring that audio as such, but you told me about it. You're the one who said that I heard this thing on NPR just now. And we'll get to that in just one moment. There's something I want to tell you about that. It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of September in the year of our Lord, 2010. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network here, high above the milk-packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. Stop it. Thank you for joining us today. It is Wednesday. God damn, is it only Wednesday?
It's only Wednesday.
I'm sorry. I hate to be that guy, because normally I try never to complain or carp or bitch or moan or anything about that. But Jesus Christ, it feels like it should be Friday already.
It's been a long couple of days.
And just last night, I was exhausted. I was so unbelievably exhausted at like 10:30. Because Laura goes a bit real early. She gets up. She has a real job. And so she gets up at 5. And then she bicycles. She gets up at 5. It's like she's just spiking the ball, you know, and running up the score. And just doing like a little dance in front of me every time she does it. She gets up at 5, she bicycles to work, which, by the way, is like at the top of Mount Doom, and then she bicycles back home after a 12-hour shift caring for the mentally ill. You know, and I basically got to work for like 5 hours, and most of that is just playing sound bites of reporters going, but he's gay, so... Anyway.
Well, I think I've mentioned before, we got together one time because she invited me to come to some foodie thing that they were doing. We talked about doing a chocolate tasting, and so I met her at this shop that sells many exotic chocolates to help pick out exotic chocolate. And I meet her out front, and I'm sitting there, and it's like the sun is beating down, and I'm sweating, and I'm feeling, you know, all lumpy and disheveled like I always am. And she walks up just cool and fresh as a daisy and looking just awesome. And then the first thing she says, you know, I'm sorry about the way I'm dressed. I just came from yoga.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just like, no, you're fine. I'm standing there like the female Jack Klugman, just standing there, just sweating and rumpled and just
The thing is, if you were to like look at my household, if you were to this is why you know the statistics and the census they're so unbelievably misleading, because if you were to look at my household, you'd say, well, this household works out and exercises an average of 20 hours a week. But really, that's because she exercises like 40 hours a week, and I don't do it at all. But so she went to bed pretty early last night, like 10 or something. And I came in and I was telling her night, and we were, you know, whatever, and talking about, you know, like whatever was going on in the day. But then I just went out, and it was like 10:30 at night, and I usually go to bed pretty late because I don't have to be like an early riser most of the time. But I just went to the office, and do you ever do this where you just, and I suspect you do, where you just sit down in your home office and like, do you have a home office, or do you have like a work area?
I do. I haven't been using it lately, but yeah, we have a bedroom that we use for a home office.
And it's where you just sink down into the chair, and you just find yourself staring at a wall, and you're just thinking to yourself, I really ought to get some things done. I have a long list. And you're not really asleep, but you're not really awake. You're just sort of sitting there, just kind of half-lifing away into the upholstery.
I'm pretty much like that whenever I'm not actually here in this room with you.
God damn. And it was all I could do. I realize what I was about to say now, but you know what? I'll plunge on ahead because there's no point in trying to cover everything up with just a mouthful of lies. Now, it was all I could do to get up and make my way to the kitchen to get a new box of Triscuits last night, because I had... They've been out. There's been a run on the cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits lately at Safeway. And
you
I don't
should
know
stop
why.
Talking about how good they are. But you're making people go buy them.
Have you had them?
No.
See, if you'd had them, you wouldn't say such a thing, because you'd know why I was incapable of stopping.
I've never had any Triscuit other than the two.
You are a failure as a human being.
Triscuits.
You are a terrible American. If you have not, do you like Triscuits in general?
I do. I enjoy Triscuits very much.
Am I like your snack food? I was going to say emissary, but that doesn't really work. Am I a sort of golden retriever for you in the world of snacks, where I have to like, it's my job to go find you things and then bring them back so you try them? You've never tried the
weirdly considering of the two of us, I am the one who is rotund. I don't eat much snack food.
Oh, man.
And when I do, I'm kind of a snack food purist. It's sort of like, you know, like, well, I'll tell you about my dinner last night, which was sort of classic snack food dinner. But no, I don't. I really don't eat much prepackaged snack food.
I'm going to bring you some of the cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuit, and you will know what you have been missing out on. They're unbelievable. The Triscuit, I don't know. We were talking about this just a while back, where there's been some sort of explosion in things that taste like other things.
Yeah.
You know, like the Pringles that taste like pizza. But, you know, when I was growing up, and for I think most of my adult life, there was Triscuits, and then recently they put out the low-fat Triscuits, which really don't taste any different.
No.
I buy them because they are, as Douglas Adams would say, slightly cheaper.
And the low-sodium Triscuits, it's like, don't go there.
I've never
do
even
that.
Tried those.
No, that's just like eating shredded wheat.
Would be the point of a low-sodium Triscuit?
I don't know.
I guess that's just like if you're solely about the texture or something.
Yeah.
So they put out the rosemary Triscuits, followed by, it's rosemary and rosemary and olive oil. Now they have cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits. Mm. Then they put out a garden herb Triscuit, which is, it's unbelievably good. And here's why it's unbelievably good. When I was a child, Don, they had this cracker called, it was a vegetable fin. Now, I know they still sell a thing that claims to be, it is labeled vegetable fins. It's not the same, though. The vegetable fins from when I was a child were actually shaped like vegetables. And
I remember those.
See, everybody remembers those, and I ate those when I was a kid, which is odd because you think of them as an old person cracker. Even when I was a kid, they were an old person
like
cracker.
Like chicken and a biscuit.
That's exactly what I was going to do. You and I, right there, simpatico is what we are. This is a serendipitous meeting of the minds in a really, like, stupid and meaningless and useless in the real world kind of way. Exactly like chicken and a biscuit, which are a thing that you picture only existing for, like, old people.
Right.
You know, where it's like they're playing Old Maid or something, like at the VFW hall. Or just guys just sitting there waiting for the ice cream social hour to begin in the afternoon. And in the meanwhile, I'll have some chicken and a biscuit. And he sounds like the Pepperidge Farm guy or something. But when I was a kid, I would eat the chicken and the biscuits and the vegetable fins. God damn, I sound old.
Because you were old even when you were young.
I was a curmudgeon even then. So chicken and a biscuit still exists. I know this. I'm getting bogged down in the minutiae. Like, even for this show, this is a stupid conversation.
Let me tell you, just cut you off right here, though, because here's the reason that I have never had the flavored Triscuits is because, honestly, when I buy Triscuits, it's kind of the same thing with Wheat Thins, although I'm very specific about textures. So the Triscuits and the Wheat Thins, while both being crackers, they serve completely different purposes to
right.
me. But they are both sort of texture conveyances for cheese. I don't tend to think of them as a snack food unto themselves. They are the crunchy foundation for like slices of cheese or bits of salami or something.
Even Wheat Thins? Because Wheat Thins to me have no texture as such.
Oh no, Wheat Thins are very good if you have like a soft spready cheese. Like the Cheddar Pub cheese from Trader Joe's.
Dude, don't even start on the Cheddar Pub cheese from Trader Joe's. I'd never had that until like a week ago.
Isn't that good? And they have the jalapeno one,
all right,
too.
We have to stop right now because I swear to God, we're like 14 minutes into the show and we actually haven't even said what's happening today. How to communicate with us.
We could do... Okay, here's the thing.
I think I've said my own name.
Somebody had mentioned that we could do like a... We had talked about doing a weekly show where we talk about book recommendations.
Yes.
You know, also we did almost an entire show over at Ham-Fisted Radio that one time just talking about pens and office supplies. We could also do one-hour special or something once a week just on snack foods.
I am wholly in favor of such an idea.
We do a weekend food show like us.
Hey, speaking of which.
Oh, it's under the thing.
I was going to ask where the Crate of Bugles went to.
The Crate of Bugles, I hid it back under the table in case Greg and Sarah had like rowdy drunken people come in this morning.
They assumed that it was community property.
Right.
Yeah, all right.
Right.
We'll get to those here in just a few. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Wednesday. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically speaking, you can do it at this number. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964 if you want to engage with us today. 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, ruminations, kvetches, ponderings, ruminations of an ironic nature, limerick, whatever it is you might have. just have this. Do not touch the bugles. All caps from Cheryl. No, no, no. That's it. We won't.
Cheryl also told me that she said, "Bless you, Dawn." Oh, so she's happy that I hid them.
Well, because Cheryl obtained those for us from General Mills, and it is. We'll go through the box later on. We got a huge crate of stuff from the Bugle folk, courtesy of Cheryl Kanakoa. So we'll go through that. If you want to email, you can do that. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com, or you can speak with us in the text box at rickemerson.com, the website. All right, here's what's coming up today. Snuff watch, taser watch. I don't even know who died. Is it somebody that I should know?
Yeah, you'll know who it is.
All right, snuff watch on the way, taser watch on the way. Democracy on the march, that's coming up. I have here in my hands the clown porn. And the clown porn came to us from listener Charles. This is listener Charles. He sent the clown porn, and let's see if I can actually see if I've got his email about it really quickly. We were talking about this last hour in Legion of News. He sent it in a plain brown box that does not label it as being clown porn. No, you know, I realize I'm searching my email under, I'm using Charles as the keyword, which really I ought to just type in clown porn. Which, hilariously enough, brought back a lot of results, including his email, but not limited to his email. He says, my schedule's screwy for the next couple of weeks. I just dropped the clown porn in the mail today. You should have it Saturday in the post. I wrote Attention Rick Emerson on it so Dawn won't accidentally open it and ruin the fun. So I've got right here. Clown porn. As we mentioned earlier, it has, in fact, no return address, and his name is nowhere on it, because I don't think he wanted them to sort of... If it were to be opened while in transport, I don't think they wanted it linking back to him. You know what I never asked him is why he owns the clown porn in the first place. Like, was it a fetish? Was he thinking about developing a fetish the way that some folks think about developing a hobby? You know, like, I had to start collecting stamps or matchbooks or Pez dispensers. And he thought, I had to develop a sexual fetish that will alienate everyone I know.
Or he thought maybe it would make him more interesting to have a fetish.
Mission accomplished, sir. So I got the clown porn right here. We'll open that. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us around 2 o'clock. And we have a top five coming up today, plus a couple of musical requests we may or may not get to. It's just a whole pile of things here. And one of those musical requests, it was the Manson song that I mentioned yesterday, the song that's performed by the Charles Manson girls. And I believe it is the one that Crispin Glover then covered on one of his later records, which is how that came up. So I have that with me here. Dawn Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
A gas pump ignites after an SUV slams into a gas pump. A teen is banned from the U.S. for life for calling Obama a prick. And a woman is left paralyzed at a pole dancing class.
Okay, well, there you go. It is 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically, don't forget tomorrow our guests will include Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and Friday Mr. Dan Clark talking about the Pirate Festival, which is coming up very soon. So it's 503-505-6964. Thank you for bringing me back. I'd written it down, but I appreciate the auditory reminder. So here's a little follow-up to the Tourette's girl, and I'll just do a little bit more of this here, just so you get a reminder here of kind of what we're talking about.
We are back talking today about the disability rights on the 20th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Dave Miller. Emily Harris is away to join the conversation with your experience or your questions.
And this is like a community affairs show, right?
Yeah, it's on OPB.
We're joined now by Emily Holmes, who works for the Oregon Youth Authority. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Now, you live with a number of different mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes. I have Tourette's syndrome, and it's interesting because technically, yes, it is a mental disability, but I consider it a physical disability because it's controlled by my brain, but it affects me physically. So I make random noises and movements that I can't control. I also have obsessive compulsive disorder, ADHD, short-term memory dysfunction, and processing disorder, which has to do with how my brain takes in and understands information and how my brain sort of gives me the information to explain to other people.
to communicate to other people.
When did the subject of your disabilities come up when you were applying for your current job?
So I was in my second interview for the job.
Had to get one more there. All right. So just for those who sort of came in late, so about a month and a half ago, Dawn comes in and she says, I heard the best thing on the radio this morning, but I can't tell you about it because it makes me a bad person. And I said, of course you could tell me about it. That's why I'm here. I am here to be, I will be the bad person for all of us. I am here to broadcast those things that you wish to, but that your conscience prohibits you from broadcasting. And so you directed me toward that audio. This is sort of like when you, this is like that Twilight Zone episode where you press the button and you get $1 million, but somebody you don't know is killed. It's like you told me about it. You're like, Rick, I'm not telling you to broadcast the Tourette's audio, but here's the link where it is. Here's where you can find it. So I played, and it's just one of the best things I've ever heard in my life. That is on a show called Think Out Loud, and I don't know whether I told you this or not. I told Cheryl, but I'm unclear about whether I mentioned this to you. So then a few weeks ago, I was invited by a good friend, James Wesby, who's a film director here in Portland. He made the movie Auteur, and he directed Storm Large's video 8 Miles Wide. He's got this film coming up called Rid of Me, and he invited me to one of the early screenings of it just to kind of give him my thoughts on it, or, you know, my feedback or whatever. And I went there, and it was, you know, just a group of folks from around town just kind of watching this film. And I'm there, and I'm talking to Courtney Hameister from LiveWire. And Courtney, I won't use the woman's name, but Courtney says, so Rick, I'd like you to meet, Jessica. And I said, oh, hello, Jessica, nice to meet you. And, you know, and then Courtney had to excuse herself or whatever. And she was talking, it's that whole thing. What do you do? Oh, I've been in radio for a while, and I do this show, the Rick Emerson Show, and I do this Outlook Portland thing. What do you do? And she says, I'm the producer of the show Think Out Loud on OPB. And she is, in fact, the woman who, like, produces and oversees, like, the entire thing. And I think at the very beginning of the show, he actually introduces himself by saying, like, so-and-so isn't here this week. I'm, you know, your host for Think Out Loud. And it was that woman. And she said, so we, and I couldn't help myself. I just said, so what kind of programs do you talk about on Think Out Loud? What sort of shows do you do? She says, well, you know, we highlight people in the Portland area who maybe are walking a different path in their life. And I said, so people who are maybe facing, and I'm just pushing, just trying to get her to say it to me because I just want to know. It's like I have to hear her say the words. And I said, so maybe people who are facing challenges in their life, is that the sort of thing that might draw your interest on Think Out Loud? And she said, yes, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago we had a show about a woman who was dealing with Tourette syndrome. And she's telling me this whole story, and I'm nodding really sagely to myself, and I'm saying, you know, I am so glad you are out there, because media is so irresponsible. And I find that they choose the lowest of roads, usually, when dealing with these things. They go for the cheap laugh and the easy joke, Jessica, and I am glad that you are there as a counterbalance. And I have to say, horribly enough, she did seem really charmed by me. And that's the only part of the, that is the only time of the evening when I felt really bad. When she really did seem to take a little bit of a shine to me, and then I felt like a terrible person for it. But then it went away. Anyway, so plunging on ahead, though, just to get back to the Triscuit thing for a minute, and then we'll get to the news, because we got Kelly Clark coming up at 2. Yeah. We got all this stuff to get through today. We started off the show by this a few minutes ago with this, and then I wanted to get the information, the sort of bits of business taken care of. The Triscuits. Here's the thing about the Triscuits, though. Okay. So they came out with the rosemary and olive oil, then the cracked pepper and olive oil, then the garden herb, which is great if you are a fan of, like, the cheese ball at Christmas time, the sort of conglomeration of cheeses with walnuts or whatever. The sort of it tastes a lot like a really good cheese ball, but it's just a Triscuit. There's also a garlic. There's a garlic, and then there's one that's like some weird. It's like the vinegar and oil potato chip kind of a thing. It's not a vinegar and oil chip, but it's kind of like that. It's like some weird British flavor. There's that, and then there's something. Fire roasted tomato is the other one. Now, of all of those, I gotta say, the rosemary one's a little sweet for my taste. It's all about the cracked pepper and olive oil and the garden herb, and I'm gonna bring them here like on Friday, so you can try them, because they're fantastic. Final thing before we get off of the subject, which we don't necessarily have to, because I'd be glad to talk about snack foods all day, but I really think we do need to set aside one day that we could do like a snack food tasting. What is, and if anybody has not tried this, really, I'm telling you right now, quit whatever it is you're doing, wherever you're going. I don't care if you're going to donate blood to an ailing relative. Go to Trader Joe's, like, now. Tell me about the pub cheese from Trader Joe's. What is that? I mean, I've had it. Lara has. In fact, it is. Have you ever had a food that was so good that you, somebody gave it to you and you tried it and you immediately said, oh, this is really good. Don't ever buy this again. Yeah. Like, you can't have it around the house because you would just eat all of it. That's the thing with the pub cheese. I ordered Lara never to buy it again. What is up with that?
Well, I think it's a take on the traditional, it's called beer cheese, where, which I believe actually has beer in it, but it's something from pubs, a pub snack where you take, and I've actually made it myself, but the stuff they got at Trader Joe's is so good. You just basically take room temperature cheddar cheese and you add some milk to it and that sort of thing. You whip it, you beat it, and then you basically make spreadable cheese. And it's kind of, you know, that's a sort of idea behind the spready cheeses, the Kakauna and that sort of thing that you buy, Kakana, however it's pronounced, because it's from Wisconsin. Except that stuff is mass-produced in these giant factories and has tons of preservatives in it, and it's probably fake cheese. Whatever the stuff is that they're doing with the Trader Joe's...
It's magic.
It's just a little bucket of whipped cheddar cheese that just you dip your chip into, and it just goes on like velvet.
You know what it is?
And it's so delicious.
It's like an even more spreadable version of whipped cream cheese.
Yeah.
If you've had the whipped cream cheese, so it's not solid like a butter. It is whipped like... It's almost like a really thick, thick Ready Whip. I mean, I know that sounds dumb, but it's like a really thick whipped cream, maybe.
Yeah, it's just...
Oh,
yeah,
it's so good. I think you can actually feel the molecules of fat in it as you're eating. I mean, it's just... They're like little tiny cheesy feather pillows being spread all over your tongue.
Yeah, like your thing with the just sitting there and eating the crackers and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's kind of like this whole elaborate thing where I get the spready cheese and then I have the Triscuits and or the wheat thins and then, if possible, maybe even some hummus and the little sliced bits of salami. And then it's like I just eat to a point where I just suddenly go, okay, I'm starting to loathe myself now. I have to package all this up and put it away somewhere far away.
Here's one of the many reasons why Lara and I are together and why we are perfect for one another is because you have to have some sort of an overlap in your food preferences. Now, as has been well established, she's a much better eater than I am. I mean, she makes a lot of things from scratch. And she's a garden. She's like the other day she did that thing. I'm not making fun of it. I'm not. I'm just saying it's like so far away from my own deal. Where she made like a pasta, like a red sauce pasta dish or whatever. But the gag was that it was all everything in it was from her garden. It's like all the oregano and the basil and thyme and even the tomatoes themselves were from our garden. Which is a thing that I would just never have the time or energy to do. But here's the other thing, is she can be drawn really easily to the dark side. She is a big fan of just having just a bunch of little snacky things around the kitchen where you just sort of graze throughout the... You just wander in there and you just take up a bunch of Triscuits. That is, in fact, how we spent what I now refer to, and this says more about me probably than anything else. I refer to this as the best Christmas we have ever had, which was last Christmas, Christmas of 2009... for various reasons, she had to work. I was busy with some stuff. We didn't leave. We didn't go to town. Nobody came to visit us. We stayed at home in our house for the entirety of Christmas Day. She went to Trader Joe's the day before and Pasta Works and Safeway and bought 70 varieties of crackers. And I just pounds, probably 15 pounds of meats and cheeses. And then it was all just put on a series of plates in the kitchen. And I had just gotten Left 4 Dead 2 not too long before that. also, she then went to the store on the way home and rented Modern Call of Duty to Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
And then she had Katamari. And that was the extent of our Christmas, is we really just sat around, we opened presents, we ate cheese, and we played Xbox. And it was the best, it really was the best Christmas I've ever had in my life.
Delightful.
It was everything that Rick Emerson needs to be happy. How was your night last night, Dawn?
Well, speaking of eating foods and trying to be happy, because I've had a weird couple of days. I've been under a lot of personal stress.
You've been hiding it well.
Apparently not, since you gave me a talking to.
No, I didn't give you a talking to. I didn't lecture you. I just I said that you seemed like you were on edge lately. You seemed a little anxious. I think is how you described it. You seemed like you had a little bit of you seemed a little agitated last couple of days.
Yeah, and it's just there's just been Here's how I put it last night when I actually sat down to talk to my husband about it. And I explained to him that from where I was sitting, and I believe now I realize that I, you know, talking to you and realizing it was seeping into the show here, too, realizing that I was actually suffering from a bit of a bout of depression. And I told my husband, I said, from where I was sitting, it was like the show was going well. The work with you was going well, but that everything else in my life is broken in some fashion, that everything else is just a series of messes that need to be cleaned up and problems that need to be fixed. And he said, yes, but they're all fixable. I'm like, yes, well, it seems that way, except when everything needs to be fixed, it just becomes sort of overwhelming, like everywhere I look, to the point where I just start nitpicking, like, well, the dog and the cat are healthy, but they have fleas, and I need to get flea medicine, and the dog needs to be washed, and the bathroom floor needs to be scrubbed. It's like every single thing I was looking at, I was just going, ah, oh, I need to do something to fix everything in my life. And I just felt miserable. And so Patrick asked me what he could do. And I said, well, there's two things. One is you can sit down with me sometime in the next couple of days and we can actually make a list of all of the things that need to be fixed. And you can help me fix some of these things. I said, and the other thing is I just need an evening where we do something to make me feel better. I said, what makes me happy? And he just looked at me strangely. And I said, well, what makes me happy? You live with me. What makes me happy?
Were you asking rhetorically?
No,
like,
I was asking him.
Or you were actually asking him to help you figure it out.
I couldn't think of what would work, you know? And he's like, well, you like TV. And, okay.
Awesome.
So what we did was basically I just spent the evening. I've set up a new work area in the living room because I was spending more and more time in the living room. And I brought out like my big flat screen monitor that I use for my thing. And I put that on the coffee table so I could use it for a TV.
Awesome.
And plugged the laptop into it. And I watched the third of, there's a series from John Moffat who does Doctor Who and stuff. It's a Sherlock Holmes series, three part Sherlock Holmes series on BBC, was starring Morgan Freeman from the British Office,
right,
as Dr. Watson. And it's really good. And we'd watched the first two. And it's one of these things the BBC does where they do like 3 90-minute like little mini movies, and that's like the whole season. And so we watched the third one of that, and then dinner was smoked sausages, big old smoked sausages instead of actual hot dogs, smoked sausage on buns and tater tots.
Awesome.
And then for dessert, I hadn't asked for dessert, but my husband went to the store and he brought back a half gallon of Tillamook banana split ice cream, which is like sort of vanilla ice cream and strawberry ice cream and maraschino cherries and fudge swirled through it. And so it was like, yeah, so I sat there watching the Sherlock Holmes thing with a blanket. Cause, like,
crying.
I was saying,
so wonderful.
I know, and I was just like, we're making Dawn feel better. And I had tater tots and ice cream, and I watched Sherlock Holmes. And honest to God, it did help make me feel better.
That's a good thing that the show isn't staffed and run and controlled by entirely unstable people. all kidding aside, though, that is good because you have to take, as corny as it sounds, that whole thing, you have to take time for you. That really is true. You have to take time for you. Just have to just disconnect and just and do nothing that is of any actual real world importance at all. Because otherwise, you just have a breakdown at some point.
And that's the problem is I tend to do that. I tend to go in the living room and we sit and we watch TV, but I've still got the laptop in my lap and
yeah.
I'm surfing things and I'm doing emails, and it's like I'm almost never completely disconnected from work of some sort. And so it was really nice to just kind of
do that. Can I just tell you,
the
most glorious time for me in a way was when they were transitioning over from my BlackBerry to my iPhone, and it was the time where the voicemail hadn't been set up. And I just so toyed with the idea of never turning the voicemail on again. Just leaving the voicemail just disabled, like, forever. And I would have, except I knew it would have made me look like a dick. And plus, it's also irresponsible. But that was a great time because it was just if I didn't want to be reached, I wasn't going to be reached. I was not going to be reachable. So, well, I'm glad you were able to do that last night. So and I will tell, Lara's a big fan of the banana split. So I'm going to tell her about that. What is it? It's banana split and
banana
what?
Split ice cream. It's Tillamook's banana split ice cream.
Fantastic.
Also, Ben and Jerry's, I think it is, also does it might be Häagen-Dazs, does a banana split in the little pints, which is actually very delicious. But the Tillamook is really good.
Wonderful. We'll go through the box of Bugle stuff later on and figure out what we've got to give away. Also, right here, clown porn.
Woo-hoo!
We'll open that, but I'm gonna talk to Kelly Clark about it first. So we'll wait for Kelly to call before we open the clown porn. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Two women suffered serious burns Monday in Kansas City after their car caught fire when an SUV crashed into a gas station pump. Police say the driver of the SUV lost control when she was trying to hit another vehicle. Police say it started when two women got into an argument Monday afternoon. One woman tried to ram her SUV into the other woman's vehicle, but lost control and hit a gas pump. The wreck happened nobody cares because we're not from Kansas City. If you're from Kansas City, it was at Independence Boulevard and Olive Avenue.
Damn it.
When the SUV driver hit the gas pump, a nearby car with two women and a baby inside caught fire. A passerby grabbed the baby.
The baby caught fire?
Well, the car caught fire.
Oh, all right. Okay.
A passerby grabbed the baby, but the two women inside the car suffered serious burns. Police say their injuries are not believed to be life-threatening. The driver of the SUV fled the scene, but a tow truck driver saw her, followed her, and called the police, and she's been taken into custody.
All right. By the way, I want to know, I was just checking what Kelly Clark is going to be talking about. So Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us here in 10, 12 minutes, something like that. You know what she's talking about today, Dawn?
Hmm.
Because this is covered in the new Willamette, among other things. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. She is talking about snack foods, specifically nachos. So she's going to be discussing nachos that's coming up. I wanted to make sure that I was remembering that correctly because it seemed too good to be true. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A British teen who sent an email to the White House calling President Obama a prick has been banned from America for life. The FBI asked local cops to tell college student Luke Angel, 17, that his drunken insult was unacceptable. Luke yesterday admitted he fired off a single email criticizing the U.S. government after seeing a TV program about 9/11. A police spokeswoman said it was a case of a boy being silly and no criminal action was being taken. We were informed by the Metropolitan Police, and so we went round to see him, she said. He said, "Oh dear, it was me." He later said, "I don't remember exactly what I wrote as I was drunk, but I think I called Barack Obama a prick. It was silly, the sort of thing you do when you're a teenager and have had a few." Luke of Bedfordshire, England, said it was a bit extreme for the FBI to act. He added, "The police came and took my picture and told me I was banned from America forever. I don't really care, but my parents aren't very happy."
So it's like a preemptive banning. It's not even like he came here and that they were like revoking his whatever. It's like they're just preemptive. Right. Like you can never come here.
Exactly.
That's sort of great, actually. I mean, not about this kid in particular, but I like the idea of a country actually just taking the preemptive step of finding someone who has never visited, who in fact shows no signs that they will ever visit. And
you
saying,
have lost your privileges,
and
mister.
You can't either, you know. So it's sort of like a sour grapes in reverse kind of a thing. Fantastic. It's 503-505-6964. I'm just trying to keep track of all of the things we've got to get to do. This is just a whole bunch of stuff. We have a snuff watch, taser watch, democracy on the march, clown porn, Kelly Clark. I mean, it's insanity. Let's get to one of our watches here if we can.
I was going to ask how you felt about that.
Yeah, let's do that now.
Let's do the snuff watch.
All right. Here is your snuff watch, ladies and gentlemen, for Wednesday right here in the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's your snuff watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Edwin Newman, who brought literacy, wit, and energy to NBC newscasts for more than three decades and battled linguistic pretense and clutter in his bestsellers Strictly Speaking and A Civil Tongue, has died at 91. NBC News did not immediately say where or when Newman had died or the cause of death. At NBC from 1952 until his retirement in 1984, Newman did political reporting, foreign reporting, anchoring of news specials, Meet the Press, Today, The Nightly News, Midday News, and a variety of radio spots. He announced the death of President Kennedy on the radio and analyzed the Vietnam War. He also narrated and helped write documentaries back when they were an influential staple of network programming. They included Who Shall Live, a 1965 study of the difficulties of deciding which kidney disease should receive life-saving dialysis.
I didn't know he did that.
Politics, The Outer Fringe, a look at extremism.
I saw Who Shall Live when I was in high school. I think they showed that to us in social studies or humanities or whatever the hell they called it. I had no idea that was him. And he's a guy that I'm not, I don't know that much about him, but if you see him or if you hear his voice, you recognize it because he was the voice of so many things for so long. And he's one of the last of the real old school guys, because Cronkite died, last year, right? 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, and like Roger Mudd and all the guys from that era. It's amazing, actually, with the most of the crew on 60 Minutes are still around because they're sort of the last of the old guard, like Mike Wallace, who's, I think, 88, something like that. Mm-hmm. He's still out there kind of reporting. But, I mean, there's the, you know, with every year, we're going to lose more of those guys.
Yep.
All right, so there you go. That is your Snuff Watch for Tuesday right here on the, I'm sorry, Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. What's that you say? You're interested in linguistics. You wish to master perhaps not only your own language, but another language as well. You wish to be conversational, conversant, fluent in another language so that when you are plunged deep into the heart of outermost Madrid. I guess you can't be deep in the heart of an outermost anything. I guess that doesn't make any sense.
No.
Let's forget that, especially in light of the fact that I was just talking about mastering linguistics, and that's actually my native language. Anyway, Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. And so if you are an adult, if you are somebody who has maybe had an overview of Spanish when you were growing up, you're in high school or whatever, you took it for a little bit, and maybe you feel like you remember just enough of it to be frustrating. It's that thing where you know just enough of the language that you could almost ask, like how to find your hotel, but not really like adequately.
That's me. I know enough Spanish I could kind of read signs. But I can't talk to anybody.
Yeah, you can just sort of like look at the map and you can go, well, that looks like it, I don't know, it might mean hotel or it might mean sewer. I can't quite tell. And then you just find yourself doing that thing of trying to flag somebody down who speaks both languages so they can talk to you, and then you feel like a clod. So don't let this happen to you. You can contact Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. Castalia focuses on real-life situations. They work with authentic materials, and classes are centered on conversation. It's not, you don't have to sit there and memorize things, because memorizing doesn't actually teach you anything. It just teaches you how to recite a bunch of stuff that you don't actually have any context for. You can learn about Spanish and the evolution of Spanish on your own time when you actually speak Spanish, which is the more important thing. So you can find out more about Castalia Language Center at portlandspanish.com. Classes are limited to just 8 students, which means you get near individual attention. It's in a comfortable, relaxed environment, and it is Spanish language classes for adults, which means everybody's learning in the same way and at the same rate. They're a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show and all the programming here at the Emerson News Network. Please tell them you did hear it here. Castalia Language Center. Reach them at portlandspanish.com. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A British woman broke her neck and was left paralyzed in a freak accident during a pole dancing fitness session. Debbie Plowman, 32, from York in northern England, was performing a routine maneuver known as the cross ankle release when she fell, breaking her neck and severely damaging her spinal cord. The mother of two remains in pain and unable to move since the accident 9 months ago. She requires a ventilator to help her breathe and can only communicate through a computer that tracks her eye movements. The cross ankle release requires the dancer to hang upside down with ankles crossed and back arched. Plowman, who had attended pole dancing classes for 2 years, was upside down just a foot above the ground when she fell on her head and was knocked unconscious.
Not so sexy now, are you?
Her husband said, fortunately, one of her friends was a nurse and knew what to do. Otherwise, I think she would have died. Debbie Plowman, who is expected to leave the hospital in 6 months, still has feeling from her head to her feet, and a series of brain scans revealed no evidence of brain damage, but could take up to 3 years for doctors to know whether she can regain body movement.
You know, I'm sorry, I just got a text message from Kelly Clark here. Let me see what this actually says.
My thought on this story, honestly, is just the first thing I thought of is that, and this woman is paralyzed, and whenever anyone asks what happened, for as long as she is like in a wheelchair or paralyzed or whatever, unless she just lies, she's going to have to say, I was paralyzed in a pole dancing accident.
Really? I mean, which is, you know, that's not a thing you want to say. All right, let's see if I can, all right. We may actually have to call Kelly. This is Kelly. She's actually texting me saying that for some reason, she says, your call-in line keeps saying it's unavailable. This is the question I have about this phone that we run here, is whether it needs to be, and we've never really gotten a definitive answer to this. I guess I could actually look through the documentation, but I didn't find it the last time. There's the two different settings. There's the online, which you think means, like, good to go. And then there is Skype me. and which are two entirely different settings, but they both show the telephone keypad. So I have no idea what the difference is between the two.
Have you ever just gone online to look at help? And
yeah, I didn't. I did like a cursory search, and I didn't find. I did that American thing where I looked in the first 5 seconds and I didn't see it, and I went, "Well, it's not here. This is good. Get me the customer support number, and make sure they speak English." All right. Well, let's see. Let's see if I can actually call out. I will call Kelly Clark here, and we will. Here's the thing about the pole dancing class. When did that become? That's a thing that that had to have started in Los Angeles, right? Nothing like that ever starts in Akron, Ohio. That always begins
probably
in California. When did that first become? I'm not trying to make light of your situation, I guess, but when did that become a thing that like suburban moms did because they wanted to stay in shape and they decided to do like stripper workouts?
I have no idea. I don't know. It's one of those
like
things.
Like you're just washing your hands.
Well, I know. It does always strike me as one of those things that soccer moms do because it makes me feel sexy or something. Or they go home and they tell their husband. Their husband's like, hey, you were at the pole dancing class. Even though he never gets to see her actually do it, he just knows that she was wrapped around a pole and therefore she's hotter for it.
That's the that is sort of the irony there is that the chicks who are at the pole dancing class are always just there in a class full of other women. And unless you're going to actually have a pole, like, installed in the living room of your home, which seems unlikely for any number of reasons.
They do have temporary poles that I guess are on big bases. So I don't know.
Rent a pole?
I've never understood exactly how they must work, but you can buy a pole that doesn't have to be, like, permanently installed in, like, concrete or something. But it seems to me they don't look safe.
What would be what would be the point of that? Because I think the whole reason for pole dancing on the regular kind of pole is that, it's not going to come loose from the ceiling and, snap your spine.
It all seems very silly to me.
All right. Let's see if we can ring up Kelly Clark here. So, anyway. So then the nun said, let's do it. The room is paid for.
Miss Kelly.
Hello, Kelly Clark. It's Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you two today?
I'm fine. Sorry you were having some difficulties there. I will endeavor to figure out what is up with that. I'm not a learned man, so it's all I can do to turn the computer on without without breaking my legs. So it's
I figured the two of you just got really busy talking about skulls or skull-like things and forgot to talk to me. That's perfectly okay.
Here's the thing. And let me ask you this, not to get bogged down in technical matters, but when you were calling the number just now, because if this is plaguing you, then presumably it's affecting other people as well. When you call, would it just not ring, or was it like actually just saying like, sorry, the number is not available?
No, it was a very lovely lady's voice telling me, I'm sorry, the party you're calling is not available.
Did it offer,
over and over again.
Did it offer to send you to voicemail?
Nope, nothing.
All right.
It didn't offer. Actually, I take it back. It didn't offer to take me to voicemail, but then it did.
All right.
After a second.
I'm going to find a way to blame the Swiss for this. You just mark my words.
Apparently, online status is the default status whenever you are online on a site. Skype me mode disables your privacy settings and allows anyone to contact you.
So it's whether you're in their directory. Other words, one is viewable only to other Skype users. One of you is viewable to just people who are in your message book or whatever.
So,
okay.
Maybe you guys should just get beepers.
That's exactly what we should do.
And then
absolutely.
call you on our jitterbugs.
Then I'll get a service where I have
on your rotary phone. I think that'd be exciting.
I'll call one of my Kelly girls. No pun intended. What a Kelly girl at a service somewhere who keeps the messages for me. We weren't actually distracted by skulls, not today. Although, if you were looking at the Twitter feed we had up the other day, the folks at Grand Central actually baked us a giant skull made out of 7-grain and sourdough bread, which was just—it was fantastic. And I have to tell you, I ate the entire thing in less than a day, which is impressive because it weighed like 40 pounds. So.
Skull bread. I would have thought maybe a skull cake would have been more appropriate, but skull bread is also always nice. Did you eat it by itself or with like bread and butter or like the blood of the innocent or what do you eat skull bread with?
So it was this guy, Jack Moralia, who he's the co-director of the Portland Halloween Bazaar, and I'd had him on Outlook Portland. He also in his daily life, he is a baker at Grand Central, and the taping was right after he got off work. So in the last hour or two of his shift, he just made this huge skull out of 7-grain and sourdough, brought it to Outlook Portland. I then brought it here to the studio. Everybody had a little piece of it, but it was very heavy and very sort of dense. It was very good. And then I took it home and it sat on the counter And Laura and I, like, if you had a time-lapse photography thing, it would have looked like what it would have looked like, that scene in Lord of War where the plane is taken apart by people with wrenches over the course of 24 hours. Laura and I just coming into and leaving the kitchen, and then a series of, like, butters and cheeses being taken out of the fridge and put on the counter and then put back away, all of it gradually diminishing, most of it going into my stomach. So I started with the really high-grade cheese. Then I went to just, like, we have those, what is it, the individual, like, string cheese things, like, for your kid's lunch or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Laura will, like, pack that in her bag when she goes to work occasionally. So then I was actually just taking the string cheese and just melting a whole thing of string cheese onto a piece of bread in the toaster oven and then just shoving it into my mouth. And then at the very, really, then it was just at the bottom end, I was just looking around in the fridge for, like, anything that was even vaguely damp to use as, like, a sauce on the bread. I was just sort of, what's this goo? Well, I don't know. Let's see if it works on the skull bread. And, you know, and whatever it was, it could have been squid ink for all I know. I have no idea. I was, anyway. Just before we plunge on into talking about this week's Willamette Week and what is in there, when you asked if we were distracted by skull talk earlier in the program and that's why you were not able to reach us, it wasn't so much skull talk as it is this. And what by this, I mean, we received a package from a listener yesterday that does contain a DVD of, I swear to God, clown porn.
Are you serious?
Yes. And it's,
are you watching? Did you guys watch it together so you could get...
This is a thing. It was sent to us by a guy named Charles because Dawn has a full-on coulrophobia thing. She has a fear of clowns. And so a guy named – and I had mentioned the fact that at home I used to have – many years ago I had this a compilation VHS tape of many, many scenes from various pornographic films. And in the middle of it, placed halfway through all of these different porn film things, these porn scenes, is just like a clown getting it on with a woman. Like, it's like there's no warning. It's like out of the blue, there's like a clown stooping a woman in a bathtub. And this guy...
You should really warm up to that.
They,
yeah.
Well, they spring it on you, too. So you're, you know, watching for scientific research. And then there's suddenly a clown going like, yeah, that's right, take it. You know, and you're just like... And suddenly you're just... It's so horrifying. So this guy, Charles, emails and he's like, I got a whole DVD of clown porn. I'm sending it to you right now. So...
I love that he didn't search this out. He just, of course, already had it at his home.
Yeah. No,
that's
he didn't need to buy it.
Wait,
he just
so
owned
in clown
it.
Porn, is it very important for the clown fetishists that the clowns stay in costume, or is it just to stay in face paint? Do they take the rest of their clown garb off and just leave the shoes on and the nose on?
Well, Rick is having trouble with the box. You know, it's one of those boxes that has a flap on the side.
But it's taped shut, though.
Yeah, but...
It's sealed with packing tape.
So you're trying to open the side that's glued.
Look, you just get with the talking and looking pretty, all right? Leave me to the package opening. I have a long experience opening pornography, all right? I have any number of discreet packages that have been mailed to my home over the years.
He's a pro.
In the compilation video that I'm talking about, he was in the bathtub, and the clown was... when I first saw this, by the way, it never occurred to me that I would be telling this, describing this scene, like, multiple times over the course of my life. The clown is in the bathtub. He is nude, but he has, like, the rainbow wig, the face paint, the red nose, and I believe the floppy shoes on. He's receiving favors from a rather buxom young lady who's in the bathtub with him.
If he's in a bathtub, how did you know what kind of shoes he had?
Because they do a full, you know, they pull back and they do like a full, like a widescreen shot or whatever.
So his feet like up?
His feet are totally...
They have multiple camera angles.
And his feet are totally up by the tap. His feet are totally up by the tap where you adjust the hot water or whatever. And it's like, and again, it was right between, you know, like some generic Ron Jeremy scene and like whatever. And it's like there's a clown with no warning and with no explanation as to why it's there. It was all very puzzling. All right, I'm opening the clown porn right now. It's wrapped in many, many layers of brown paper.
You know, I may be less terrified by clowns if they have their suits off because that's part of their power, power to terrify me.
So
maybe I can actually get behind clown porn.
I have to tell you, I'm looking at the. I'm holding this so that Dawn cannot quite see it yet. It's a long reveal. I am looking at this this clown DVD. And first of all, let's be clear. This isn't like a homemade thing. Like he paid someone. We're unclear about why he owned this. Someone paid $34.95 for this. It is guaranteed to contain, quote, 100% sexual oddities. And then the tagline is, it's called Circus of Sex. The tagline is, see how carnival freaks F with a huge exclamation mark. And I on the front of it is a, it is a clown with a big red wig and a big red nose and rather shoddily applied. I mean, it's a bit slapdash in terms of the makeup application. And then he's humping it out. I'm looking at some of the other alleged clowns here. I have to say that they are a sort of low-budget sort of clown for the most part. Some of them look like... A couple of the clown guys look more like Clockwork Orange droogs with white face paint. And one of them looks like one of the baseball furies from the Warriors. This is all very disturbing. While you are listening
what
now...
What you're telling me...
I was going to say, I'm going to hand this to Dawn so you can hear her reaction. All right, here you go, Dawn. Clown porn for you.
Oh!
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
See, I don't even know why that... the thing about the clown porn is that, I mean, in terms of the porn world, that's a full production. It's the DVD, it's the cover art, it's the packaging, it's the shipping. I mean, it's not like a thing that you just downloaded from some guy's homemade site on the web. So I'm wondering if they, like, how they determined that there would be a sufficient market for this. How did they focus group it? How did the guy realize... that there would be enough of a demand to warrant the investment of making this? That's my question.
Oh, no, there's a market for everything. I mean, literally, if you just took, like, you know, the magnetic poetry that you're supposed to put on your fridge and jumbled up the words and added sex in the middle of them, you could make a video of that.
You could have,
like, balloon, neck, secretary, janitor, you know, tuna fish sandwich. Dude, you've got a porn right there.
And as soon as you do that, there's
it doesn't matter what it is.
Then there'll be an aisle of fantasy that is just called that. It's funny you say balloon, actually, because just last hour, Dom was talking about balloon fetishists, which is a thing. I wasn't even aware that balloon fetishes existed. So, you know, there
is... Oh, like a latex fetish or like a fetish that involves, like, squeaking and popping balloons?
Well, Dawn, explain to Kelly how there's some controversy going on in that world.
Apparently, in the world of balloon fetishists, there is some argument about whether or not you are a true balloon fetishist if you prefer deflated balloons to inflated balloons, because then you're really just a glorified latex fetishist. That to really be a balloon to balloon fetish, they have to actually be inflated to full balloon stature. So
I frankly agree. And you know what? For the integrity of this group to stand, I just don't think the deflated fetishists can be admitted, really. I don't think they should come to the parties. I don't think they should partake in the orgies. Frankly, it's just sad.
Let's move away from the porn discussion here, just because I feel like...
Easy for you to say. You don't have, like, a clown with an erection on the table in front of you.
Clown with an erection. That's like the world's weirdest CAPTCHA that you have to enter somewhere. Like what seems like an eternity ago, before we began opening the clown porn box. So Don and I were having this discussion this morning about snack chips and cheeses and a variety of whatever.
Sorry, you're breaking up.
I was going to say that I'm sorry, are you there? I think
you're breaking up.
No. Am I adequate? No, I'm just screwing with you.
Is this some new kind of fetish that I don't know about?
I think this sounds like a... Are you on a cell phone?
No, I...
It sounds very much like it's on her. And hello, hi, how are you?
Hi.
Is that any better?
Now it is, yeah.
All right, there you go.
I had to actually go outside.
All right. We were talking about, we had a whole snack food discussion going earlier, which actually ties right into the new issue of Olema, because you guys have a whole, I don't know what makes them the most terrifying nachos in town, but I know that's a thing you're talking about.
Yeah, we had a writer, Chris Stamm, who decided to do a nacho survey to survey the land of chips and cheese, and he had about a month to do it. We didn't think much of it. We just sent him out to bars and, you know, restaurants to eat nachos. Well, we never really thought about how sick it would make him to eat, like, 9 or 10 orders of nachos within, like, a 3-week period. That makes you ill. Just buckets of salsa and cream cheese and cheddar and chips and, like, unidentified meat and, like, chili, like, pickled jalapenos. The man was ill, and he wrote a story for us that it's basically a survey of, you know, of interesting nachos around town, but really it's just like a trip through the heart of darkness of cholesterol. I mean, it's pretty magical. So he was nice enough to tell us some of the best nachos he found in town and some of the absolute worst.
What was the you don't have to give away the best, but what was maybe on the list of the best nachos?
On the list of the best nachos, hands down, was Dot's Cafe, an oldie but goodie. And it got high marks, actually, because of the cheese crust, because they properly melted the cheese, and it created that little crunchy crust that forms
right
on the edge of the plate.
Exactly.
And also because the salsa, which he calls a devilish agent of sogginess, gets its own bowl.
See, that's important.
So
you got to do that. You can't just pile the salsa on there because, A, the chips get all sogged up, and then it's never in the proper amount. The proportions are always wrong. The ratio is never correct if they apply it for you. They don't know best. I know best.
No, and I never really thought about it before, but he's exactly right. So he says Dots is just a joy. It is a nacho joy. Like, this is the thing. Like, this is what we talk about when we talk about nachos, is Dots. On the other hand, what?
No, I was just, go ahead.
No, on the other hand, you know, we've got a lot of people in town who are trying to get cute with their nachos and sub the chips for other sort of substances or things or crackers. And the Liberty Glass, which is a lovely place if you've been to the Liberty Glass, it's the pink house that's kind of at the edge of North Mississippi. They've got a three-legged dog. They're a wonderful place. But they serve Triscuit nachos.
Is that where Lovely Houlihan's used to be?
Is that another Lovely? Is it the building that was Lovely Houlihan's?
Yeah, a million years ago.
Okay,
place.
Yeah.
And they serve Triscuit nachos, and they do cheddar cheese, jack cheese, a red pepper tapenade, sour cream, like all this good stuff. But apparently, like the Triscuit itself, he says it tastes like a hardwood floor carpeted with cheese.
Now,
just dry. That in order to get them down your throat, you have to chug beer, and then you've got beer flavored nachos or Trischachos, which he's calling them. He says it's just intolerable, that they're the worst things ever.
We were actually talking about Triscuits about half an hour ago, because I said that last night I've become a real fiend for the cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits. And in a pinch, like if there are no actual sort of tortilla chips or chip-like things in the house, I will in fact use Triscuits to make those. And you know, it's good, but it is a little bit like you're eating a Formica tabletop.
See, oddly enough, I actually eat what I guess you would call Triscuit nachos at least twice a week for dinner. Like, this is Triscuits with cheese, with melted cheese, is one of my favorite meals on the planet. So I actually fought with Chris about this because I can't believe they actually taste bad. But I believe that the problem is a poor application of cheese. Like, I think there's a poor cheese to Triscuit ratio, and that's why they messed up.
Well, and if you're using the wrong kind of cheese, then it doesn't add. The thing about the cheese is this is, by the way, what makes this show great. This is the hallmark of the program, that we're actually having a serious discussion about the technical logistics of making Triscuit nachos. What you've got to do is you've got to use a cheese so that, A, it melts sufficiently, because, B, the oil from the cheese helps to make the Triscuits sufficiently pliable so that they bend just the right amount so that it's not snapping off like a dry twig in your mouth.
Well, also, you have to have complete coverage of cheese to Triscuit. I mean, you can't have a single bit of the Triscuit not covered with cheese. It's easier to lay them out in a square pattern of nine, and you have to lay them down salt side down, because that way when you eat them, your tongue will get the full flavor of the salty side of the Triscuit as it gets the oozy cheese.
Wait a minute.
The only way to do it.
You're going a million miles an hour here. What do you mean lay them salt side down? You mean Triscuits have a salty side?
Oh, yes. That's what makes a Triscuit not taste like shredded wheat. Triscuits are two totally different animals. They have a plain side, and then they have a salted side. If you get up close to a Triscuit, you can see the little grains of salt on it. And this makes all the difference. In fact, you can't eat anything on a Triscuit if you don't eat it salt side down. You can't eat, trust me, any spread is not going to taste good on a Triscuit. It's going to taste like carpet. if you don't eat it salt side down.
You're blowing my mind. Dawn, did you know this?
I had no idea. I thought they were salted on both sides.
So they're like a frosted mini wheat, basically. There's the frosty side, and then there's the regular wheaty side. All right. Well,
it's a savory one.
Here's the great thing about this is this is just like more justification, as though I needed it, which clearly I do not, to purchase additional Triscuits. Like, not even tonight, probably like on the way home from the show, I will be doing that.
And another reason for our weekly or at least monthly snack food episode of of the show, maybe on the weekend.
Yeah, we're gonna start instituting a snack food program. Here like once a week or something.
I think that's a really good idea. Yeah,
we just have like a wine tasting for really trashy items.
It's whatever the opposite of the splendid table is.
Totally.
Exactly.
The card table.
Well, God knows, you know me, I never eat any snack food, so I will be of no help with this.
Real quickly, before we wrap this up, tell me, I'm not going to pretend to know more about this than I do. All I know is that in the new Willamette, you referenced something called the We're All Going to Die documentary about bees.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a new documentary called Queen of the Sun, and it just came out. It premieres this Friday at the Hollywood Theater, and it's by the guys that did The Real Dirt on Farmer John. It's a local pair of guys, a director and a producer that do these. And basically, it's all about bee genocide. It's about the fact that the world is killing off its bees and how much we are totally screwing ourselves in the process. I don't really care. I mean, I'm a horrible person. I didn't really care a lot about bees. And then I was watching this, I was like, yeah, whatever. Until Michael Pollan, the sustainable food guru who was in this documentary, reminded me that bees pollinate 4 out of every 10 foods that we eat. So pretty much, if we kill off all the bees, we're not going to have any fruit, vegetables. I mean, we're just going to be... We're going to be in a world of hurt. We're going to be eating nothing but tachos. That's really all we're going to be able to eat.
Rick Emerson was giving me a hard time a few weeks ago, telling me that I didn't know what I was talking about when I said the bees were important and that crops were going to die and that the bees pollinate everything. And you accused me of making it up.
I didn't say you were making it up. I didn't. I never said.
No.
And by the way, I should say that I got an earful of this from my wife last night because I made some passing comment about blah, blah, blah. And the bees are vanishing, blah, blah, blah. And she just like my wife unleashed like a 20-minute like MoveOn.org lecture at me about the bees. So, I mean, I've been getting the bees from all directions this week.
So that means were what? Wrong?
I'm not willing to stipulate that I was wrong as such.
I think that's the word he's searching for.
It's a word.
Well, you know, this is Bee Week in Portland. The mayor himself has proclaimed this Portland Bee Week. There's going to be a tour to Coops for backyard beekeepers where you can go check out their beekeeping apparatuses, hive thingies. Dude, it's like a whole thing. It's seriously.
Did we get documentary. The bee girl from that video?
Dawn, I tell you right now, I will give a large amount of money to your favorite charity if I can get you to put on a beard of bees.
No.
Okay. No. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. The crazy thing about this is like, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Okay, that sucks. The bees, like, apparently in 2006, like half of the hives of bees, like, the bees disappeared from their hives. The weird thing is that I didn't really understand what we did to bees. We feed them corn syrup, which is like the meanest thing to do to natural honey producers in the world. We force corn syrup down their little bee gullets.
Oh.
It's people.
I think
because we have to jack
the phrase.
This is crazy. We jack what?
The phrase down their little bee gullets is at once the cutest and saddest thing I have ever heard. But go ahead.
I had to pause the movie while I was watching it. I was watching the DVD, and I had to pause it because I was laughing, and I was incredibly sad at the same time. Because it's just, we wake them up in the middle of winter while they're hibernating. We take their hives, we wrap them up in saran wrap, we put them on, like, tanker trucks, and track them across the country, and then we pour corn syrup in their hives to, like, kind of, like, hype them up and make them crazy, so they will go pollinate all of the vast, like, monoculture crops of corn and almonds and stuff like that.
Aww.
Because they don't have their own bees, because everything all blooms at the same time, so they can only support bees for, like, 3 weeks out of the year, and so there's no bees in California. There's, like, no bees near any of the crops, like, all of the stuff. They have to whore out bees and pour corn syrup in their hives, and then they mix them with bees from other countries, and they get bee STDs and die.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
Okay. Wow.
I told you, it's awful.
I am trying to process so many things right now. My brain is trying to analyze so many different facets of my own world. All right. The new issue is on stands. Read it in print right now or read it online at wweek.com. And then you have to come join us in the studio when we do our big trashy food tasting sometime in the near future.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't miss it.
All right. Sorry for
you
the...
You guys have a good day.
You too. Sorry for the weirdness of getting a hold of us. Thank you. There you go. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week.
Cheryl says she just licked a Triscuit, and Kelly is right. Only one side has salt.
How did I not know that? I guess it's because I just grind it up in my mouth, and then it's all immediately, then there are no sides left. Jesus. All right, well, now everything just seems depressing and hilarious, kind of all at once. Hey, can you name me that clown porn again?
Sure.
I want to
I was going to wait until after Kelly was gone and ask if we should, if I should put it in my DVD player and we should fire it up and... You want me to, describe what I'm seeing.
There's a warning on the inside. It's warning, some footage may be too disturbing. And then it says, strange, never-before-seen sexual oddities, Don, this clown porn.
Now, I could take it home and watch it tonight and then tell you what I saw tomorrow.
What's the fun in that?
You could do almost like a video rodeo thing and make me watch it.
But. All right. Still to come, we have a Taser Watch, Democracy on the March, and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program right here on the Emerson News Network. Back after this.
Guys like me, ooh, 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 ooh.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. So in the course of one show, we have basically like 20 minutes of food porn at the beginning of the program. Then we went to clown porn. Then we went to bees being pimped out, being all hopped up on corn syrup, and being forced to pollinate whatever it was, whatever their handlers ordered them to pollinate, after which they catch BSTDs and die. Welcome to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. It is Wednesday. Still on the way, we have a Taser Watch, also Democracy on the March. Also, I got this DVD of clown porn right here in my hand that we still have yet to... You know, I don't know how many of these guys actually would be considered clowns at a circus. It appears to be guys who are just wearing like a weird variety of costumes and a lot of makeup.
There's guys in creepy masks and hats.
But then this guy...
But there is also actually a clown.
That guy's a full-on clown.
He is a full-on clown.
I'm really disturbed by this. I mean, and I'm not a man who's easily disturbed. This guy, by the way, did you see this? This is a clown sucking a woman's foot right here.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm going to set this aside for... get to that. Don't forget, coming up at 4 o'clock today, if you are listening to PDX.FM, Don Taylor will be doing another exciting episode of Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. What's coming up today, Don Taylor?
We are going to be discussing the new movie The Town, directed by and starring
Ben Affleck.
And God only knows what else.
All right, that is all on the way. It's 503-505-6964 at the news desk. This, ladies and gentlefolk, is Don Taylor.
And now... from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And don't forget that today's Rick Emerson Radio Program is brought to you by Mr. Michael Beatty, among other folks. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about them at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. You'll clean anything your feet touch, whether it's at your home or your place of business. More on that later on. That is 971-533-3211. Here's Don Taylor.
Did you finally get the audio I emailed to you?
And you sent that to, let's see. What is the, would the subject line be, here's the audio?
Quite possibly, yes.
Wait, let me check. Is that for this, is this sound for today? One
yes.
File? Okay. I wanted to make sure that I had the, right things. I've had several things arrive from you, over the last few minutes, including one claiming that they are, quote, Rick Emerson clones. All over Southeast Portland today. And so today's email has been, I'm looking through my inbox right now, and it's just been, today's email has been a series of disturbing, deliveries. Just all kinds of things that I found very, very unnerving. Yeah, I do have that, by the way.
Okay, good. Well, this would be then our Democracy on the March.
It's time for another exciting installment of Democracy on the March, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Is Democracy in the March with Don Taylor.
Conservative Christine O'Donnell pulled off a stunning upset over nine-term Representative Mike Castle in the Republican Senate primary in Delaware yesterday, propelled by Tea Party activists into a November showdown with Democrat Chris Coons. After a primary season shaped by economic pain and exasperated voters, the grassroots anti-establishment movement can claim wins in at least 7 GOP Senate races, a handful of Republican gubernatorial contests, and dozens of House primary campaigns, and it influenced many others. The Delaware outcome reflected the energy and enthusiasm of the Tea Partiers, but O'Donnell also enters the race against Coons as an underdog, putting GOP control of the Senate further out of reach. Carl Rove, of all people, told Fox News Channel, "This is not a race we're going to be able to win." In fact, on Wednesday, a triumphant O'Donnell accused the party of Republican cannibalism. She said, "We have to rise above this nastiness and unify for the greater good, because there's a lot of work to be done, and there are a lot of people who want to get involved if the Republican Party would."
Here's the thing about this. I have so many hundreds of things to say about this. One, I mentioned this during Legion of News, that it is tempting, I think, for people on the left. I think the extreme left in America, just like the extreme right, is basically just composed of nitwits and fools. And so they don't really ever bother to step back and look at the larger picture. So as much as sort of empty-headed liberals really just reflectively scream about the Tea Party guys, because they are crazy. I mean, they're crazy, yeah. And they're shrill, and they're humorless and whatever. The Tea Party folks, that is. The other thing is, if you are like some real hell bent on social change liberal, you really ought to be happy about this, because it just means that the Republicans will effectively win like nothing come the actual general election, because what they have basically done is the Republicans have in the primary gotten rid of the Republican candidate who was most electable, because by dint of that he was also the most traditional, and so they have then replaced. Such as in Delaware, they have replaced the electable Republican candidate with this O'Donnell woman, who just seems like an out and out like lightweight and nutcase.
Even the Republicans don't want her there. They didn't want her to run.
Right. She's going to get creamed. Here's the really brilliant thing about this, though. The really amazing thing when you step back and you really consider this is that this is exactly the same the sort of thing that Republicans were doing in 2008. When 2008 came around, Rush Limbaugh was actually he stepped into a little bit of a sticky wicket, and he never got charged with anything because he didn't actually committed a crime. But there were some folks that tried to get Rush Limbaugh indicted on vote tampering charges, because Rush was encouraging Republicans in certain states where you had an open primary, which means you weren't limited to you didn't have to be a registered member of a party to vote. Anybody could vote for any candidate. And he was encouraging Republicans to vote for the most unviable, weakest Democratic candidates imaginable, so that then when the general election came around, the Republicans just had a straw man candidate that they could just completely demolish. So it's great now to see those own tactics actually being used by the Republican Party against itself. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch. It really is just amazing.
Well, as far as Christine O'Donnell is concerned, she's a Sarah Palin clone in a lot of ways.
But not as interesting.
No, she's younger. She's good looking. She speaks relatively well. And she's very, very ambitious. Let us travel in time back to 1993, shall we? When Christine O'Donnell was just a teenager. And even then, she was an activist when she was profiled on MTV as part of a teenage let's just listen to it. This is the spot about her organization, SALT.
We need to address sexuality with young people, and masturbation is part of sexuality.
Is that her?
But it is important to discuss this from a moral point of view.
Masturbation is a selfish act, and it's a lustful one, and we are to walk with pure hearts, not adulterous, lusting hearts.
The Bible is clear in the fact that it says that any sexual act outside of the realm of marriage is wrong.
The Bible says that lust in your heart is committing adultery. So you can't masturbate without lust. The reason that you don't tell them that masturbation is the answer to AIDS and all these other problems that come with sex outside of marriage is because, again, it is not addressing the issue. You're going to be pleasing each other. And if he already knows what pleases him and he can please himself, then why am I in the picture?
Wow. So
congratulations, Maryland.
Well done.
Well done.
Was that from one of those Sex in the 90s shows that MTV used to run all the time?
Something like that, yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's her with late 90s, early 90s hair.
Like a scrunchie, probably.
Yeah.
Talking about, so this is, so
she
this
is, the,
is.
She was the founder and leader of
what
her.
What does SALT stand for?
Standing Alone.
Lust.
Like,
truck.
Standing Against Lust Truck. I don't know, something like that. But yeah, and yes, it, her her teenage anti-masturbation organization.
Jesus. You want to talk about an unwinnable campaign.
We need to address sexuality with young people, and masturbation is part of sexuality.
All right. Well, there you go.
But that's, I mean, you know, if he already knows what pleases himself, what does he need me for?
Well, dishes don't wash themselves, do they?
I'm just going to go get the pizza.
I cannot wait for the election. I mean, that's the thing. I can't. It fills me with just the most exuberant kind of carbonated joy to think of. You probably didn't. Were you? Dom, are you paying attention to the primary season that just happened in Arizona?
No.
So, you know, McCain, they were saying this was a year when McCain was going to be vulnerable in the primary because he was so damaged by his alliance with Sarah Palin and, you know, and he, blah, blah, blah. Everybody loved McCain, including most liberals and most, most moderates. Everybody really liked John McCain until the last election when he ruined all of his goodwill. And so they were saying that this was going to be a hindrance, that all of the moderates that liked John McCain had defected after the 2008 race and he was going to get hosed. That was until they found this great ad. There used to be this infomercial that ran on television some years ago, and McCain's opponent actually was the guy who hosted this infomercial. And it was one of those things you've seen a million times where a guy comes on and he talks about grants and loans and benefits that are available to you, the average citizen, from the government. And you've seen these 800-number commercials where he said, did you know that there's free government grants available? Buy my book at 1-800 blah, 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 and you'll find out 1,000 ways you can get money from the government. So the guy had been in an infomercial like this about 10 or 12 years ago, and was now running, of course, as a fiscally conservative Republican. So the McCain campaign just got copies of the infomercial with the guy talking about get money from the government. And they ran it like 1,000 times an hour as a McCain ad showing his opponent talking about how you can get money from the government. Wah, wah, wah. It was awesome. It's really one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. There was another commercial that happened where this guy, McCain's opponent, had been talking to some group somewhere, some community organization, wherever, it doesn't matter. But he made, not even reference to anything, he just made offhand, just in passing, the observation to somebody in the crowd. He said, well, you know, he was talking about the war in Afghanistan and how we never officially declared a war there, and so why should we be there if it's not officially a war? And he said, well, you know, ma'am, this is a little known fact. People don't really know this. He said, but, the United States often engages in combat without declaring war. And then he says to the crowd, he says, for example, even though we were in combat against Nazi Germany, you know, we never officially declared war against Germany. We were in a combat situation, but war was never officially declared. So that's not always necessary for the government to do. The ad took that footage of him saying we never declared war against Germany, and they made it one of those old, like, movie tone news things where it's all black and white and jittery. And they then juxtapose him saying we never declared war on Germany with, like, the actual audio of Congress declaring war on Germany, like in 1941 or whatever. And then it just ends. I swear to God, the campaign commercial ends. They found some blog somewhere that had ranked this guy they'd ranked the intelligence, in their opinion of guys in Congress. And they actually ended the ad by saying, Arizona, do you want one of the stupidest men in Congress representing you? We didn't think so. I mean, there was a campaign ad that actually just said, do you want one of the stupidest men in Congress? And I was watching this and just thinking, God damn it, we have really come, we've come a long way from the thing of the girl plucking the daisy and the nuclear weapon coming out of the silo.
And speaking of Nazis, somebody, I'm not going to play because it's like 8 minutes long, but somebody in the text box sent me a link. You can go to YouTube, and there's was an episode of Politically Incorrect from 1998 that Christine O'Donnell was on with Martin Mull, Jasmine Guy, and Eddie Izzard.
Awesome.
And apparently during the course of the discussion, she explains why she wouldn't lie to Hitler if she was hiding Jews.
Oh, man. I see. I'm just saying, it's like just the election cycle can never begin early enough for me.
It's like Rick Emerson Christmas.
It really is, man. Oh, that's fat. Let's just one more time and just get a little bit of the...
We need to address sexuality with young people, and masturbation is part of sexuality.
I'm going to go through. I'm going to isolate the whole, if he knows what pleases himself, which I think, by the way, that tells us more about Ms. O'Donnell and perhaps her relations than it does about anything else.
Why do I need to be part of
that? I'm just a sexual appendix. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Oh, are we done with Democracy in the March?
Oh, yes, we are.
There you go. Let's There's your Democracy in the March for Wednesday.
Starbucks, yeah. Disney World, yeah. Porno, yeah. Valium, yeah. Reebok, yeah. Fake, yeah. Sushi, yeah. Taco Bell, yeah. NFL, yeah. Rock and roll, yeah. Internet, yeah. Slavery, yeah. America,
yeah. All right.
Let's take a breather between that watch and another watch, and I'll do a non-watch story.
Before you do that, let me just read this from the text box. This makes so much more sense now. Thank you, Kelly. Salt side down for my Triscuits from now on. Thank you. I was a whole thing. I never realized Triscuits. I'm going to send
it. I did either.
I'm going to send a Twitter update about that from my phone here in just a bit. Oh, speaking of my phone, let me read one more, and then we'll get to another story. We'll do the Taser Watch. I have to play this little Manson thing because I said I would, and then we will see what else we can get to, because you have to get over to Ham-Fisted Radio today with Mr. Bobby Roberts. Did you already say what you were going to be speaking about?
Yes, we're talking about the movie.
That's right, the Ben Affleck film. Can you give me a quick thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs up. I really enjoyed it.
It looked good. The trailer looked fantastic.
I don't think it's quite as good. He also directed Gone Baby Gone, which I loved. I don't think it's not quite as good as that, but it's still, it's very, very good.
Is this from is this like an original screenplay or whatever? Because that was Gone Baby Gone was the Mystic River guy. That was a book.
Yeah,
right?
Dennis Lehane.
Yeah,
this is based on a short story or a novel by someone else.
But it's an adaptation.
An adaptation somewhere. But no, it's really good. And Affleck is good in it. And this is like the second or third film I've seen him in as an actor now, where I've just gone, wow, he actually has developed some talent.
I don't think he's
used to loathe him.
I never thought he was a bad actor. I didn't think he was.
I did.
I didn't think he was great. But I mean, I've seen like bad acting, and I never thought that just as a whole he was a bad actor. I mean, he had bad roles, I guess, but I never looked at him as like, oh, he can't act at all. He seemed like a guy who had promise.
No, he's also, and this is his second film as a director, and he's really proving himself to be actually a very good director.
Good for him. And I have never been anti Ben Affleck. I have rooted for that guy from the beginning, even when he was going through the whole Bennifer, Geely, you know, Jersey Girl, that whole thing. I've been in his corner since day one. So I'm a believer in the Affleck brand.
This also, I had one of those fangirly kind of fluttery moments when the two FBI guys are played by John Hamm and Titus Welliver.
Really?
And if you're familiar with Titus Welliver at all, he was the man in black on Lost. And the two of them side by side.
Don Draper,
like,
and the man in black.
It's like a dream come true.
Is it hard to see John Hamm not as Don Draper?
It is a little bit. And also he's, the thing is, he is so excellent as Don Draper. It's a little difficult sometimes when you see him in other things. He's a little stiff in this. He's not really well suited to this role. So he seems a little awkward, which is kind of sad because I'm so used to just accepting him as. But no, it is a little odd to see him as something else.
The guy who's like that for me is James Gandolfini, which is unfortunate because he's a great actor. He really is in a certain, you know, narrow kind of way. But you see him in like In the Loop, I love that film, which is a fantastic film.
He is so good in
that. He's great, but he has these mannerisms that are very, that I realize now are not Tony Soprano mannerisms. They are James Gandolfini mannerisms. And he didn't, I mean, not like I know, like I can act, but he doesn't, he just didn't strip away those things when he became Tony Soprano. So now I view them as Tony Soprano things. And one of them is when he is angry or like trying to control his temper and he does this thing of breathing in and out of his nose. He doesn't have the musical nose like I did just there, but he does that thing of like the weird like thing, and it's like and he does that a couple times in The Loop too, and I associate with that with him like trying not to put a beat down on Christopher or something. But this other text says Rick just got my iPhone. Well done. Was planning on putting the invisible shield on it tonight. First, well, I'll get to the, just let me finish this. Coworker says it, quote, messes up, end quote, how the screen works. Is this true? I just want to know what I'm getting myself into. Honestly, I'm just putting this thing on because you recommend it. Attention, prospective advertisers. She says, I'm just putting the invisible shield on my iPhone because you, and by you she means me, Rick Emerson, recommend it. Help is appreciated. Thank you. First of all, your coworker didn't know what he's talking about. When he says it, quote, messes up your screen, it does no such thing.
You showed me your phone and you had put the thing on, and I had to like actually pick it up and really look at it carefully to make sure that it was even on there. It really
is
invisible.
And
yes,
it's working. You see how it's actually working. Everything is functioning correctly.
It makes no difference at all.
Yeah, so it makes no difference at all.
And you can't even actually see that it's on there. It really is
an invisible shield.
An invisible shield.
And also this. Here's the other thing. And I mean this because I don't want you to come away from this feeling like Rick Emerson steered you wrong. The invisible shield is awesome. Do not put it on yourself. Do not, even if you have already purchased it, take it back and ask if for like whatever, like the differential, which is like $10. Have them put it on. Do not try to put it on yourself because you will do that incorrectly.
And I'm assuming also I shouldn't just spend 89 cents to buy the cheap version on Amazon.
No, you should not.
And do it myself.
No, because the thing is that will peel off like within a week or two. I mean, you'll just be endlessly replacing it. And here's the other thing about that. Every time you have to put like the cheap, like the kind that's like a playing card sort of, but it's plastic, and you like stick it on there. Every time you do that, you'll get like hairs and whatnot caught between there and the screen. And then every time you look at the screen, you're going to see like a little hair or a piece of dust or an air bubble in the middle of it, and you're just going to be like, ah. And
that's
I
hadn't even occurred to me that if I bought one of those kits, even a really good one, and tried to do it at home, I'm like in the middle of dog hair central.
Yeah, and it comes with like a little squeegee thing or whatever because they want you to put it down flush. You are a little bit OCD, not unlike myself, and as a guy who filled up a trash can with like 40 of those one day trying to get it to go on correctly, and then you put it in and out of your pocket 100 times and it just tears off at the corners.
Yeah.
The invisible shield ever does that, you take it back to replace
it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, I'm telling you, don't try to do it yourself. Okay. All right. Don't be a hero. All right. There's no call for that. Here is Don Taylor.
More than 1.2 million Chuck E. Cheese light-up rings and toy eyeglasses were recalled Wednesday over concerns over the children might swallow the small battery inside the toys. The Consumer Product Safety Commission said the plastic on the toys can break, possibly exposing the button-type batteries inside. Ingestion could lead to stomach, intestine, or esophagus problems or other damage.
Button. Who's got the button?
The commission did not link the toys to any reported injuries, but it said two children were able to remove the battery from the light-up rings. One child swallowed it. The other child put the battery up his nose. There were no reported incidents with the toy eyeglasses.
By the way, I think we all understood that it was a boy. I think the up his nose, it's helpful but not really required because I think we all knew that was a male.
The 1.1 million light-up rings were part of a promotional offering between April 2009 and June of this year, or were offered during Parent-Teacher Association conventions. They came in blue, green, purple, red, and pink.
I don't get the thing of a boy's putting stuff up their nose.
I don't either.
I mean, they do it, but I mean, why?
I don't know.
What is the reason for that, do you suppose?
Because boys just want to put things in orifices.
And other things.
Yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Now let's do our Taser Watch.
Here's your Taser Watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You got me running, going out of my mind. I can do it! Is your Taser Watch for Wednesday.
A Madison, Wisconsin man known as Bongo Jesus was arrested on four charges after a fight on State Street. Brandon Hochstrasser will face charges of battery to a police officer, resisting arrest, and disorderly conduct. Police spokesman Joel Despain said the dispute started over some questionable guitar playing. A 54-year-old man with no permanent address, hanging out with others in the 500 block of State Street, evidently decided he was not going to keep his thoughts about the guitar playing to himself. He went over to Bongo Jesus and provided some sort of critique, which did not sit well, Despain said. Heated words were exchanged and the disagreement escalated. When police were called, we were advised that the musician was hitting the victim over the head with the guitar, Despain said. After the two men were separated, Hochstrasser allegedly charged at the victim, barreling into him from behind. It sent the victim sprawling to the pavement. The victim told a responding officer he thought his hip was broken. A witness to the fight rode his bike up to a 65-year-old police sergeant who was on routine foot patrol, told the sergeant of the fight while pointing at the two homeless men fighting with each other. The suspect was now walking toward the sergeant while screaming at passerby. The sergeant watched as Bongo Jesus allegedly slammed a college-age student into the wall of a business. The sergeant moved in to make an arrest. The suspect fought with the sergeant. Both ended up on the floor of a local business with Bongo Jesus allegedly punching and kicking at the sergeant, at which point the policeman tasered him and arrested him. After he was tasered and arrested, Bongo Jesus continued to yell expletives at officers and passerby. At one point, Despain said, he said the victim who commented about his guitar playing had been his friend. His friend up until the time he made the comment about the guitar playing.
In what city did this take place?
Madison, Wisconsin.
But every city has that guy, too. Every city has the Bongo Jesus type figure. Like, we have the Elvis guy at Saturday Market, the sort of emaciated, balding Elvis with the guitar.
When I lived in California, when I lived in Hollywood for a while, we had a guy who I used to call Guitar Man, who, when he had his guitar, which was an old beat-up acoustic guitar with no strings, and he would walk down the string strumming it and singing very loudly. He would do that when he was in a happy, happy mood. When you would hear him screaming and yelling at things about two blocks away, you would look out the door and see that he did not have his guitar with him, and he was yelling at cars and pounding his fists on their hoods. That's when I would, like, just close and lock my door until Guitar Man had passed by.
He'd moved on. All right, there's your taser watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
A 54-year-old Washington State man has been arrested after police say he crashed two cars while intoxicated, then got in his tow truck and tried to move the vehicles. The Bellingham, Washington Herald reports that Tommy Reiser was arrested and booked in jail on three counts of driving under the influence on Monday. The Whatcom County Sheriff's Office says Reiser crashed his truck into a utility pole Monday night, abandoned that vehicle, and then got in his wife's Volkswagen, but crashed that car into a guardrail. He then got his privately owned tow truck and attempted to tow the vehicles, even with his bloodied forehead. Sergeant Larry Flynn says Reiser pulled up to the scene of one of the crashes while police were investigating.
Fantastic. Excellent. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. I want to take one moment to remind you, there's so many things today that I could be tying this into, but instead I will say, just quite simply,
as you pull the paper out from underneath the clown porn,
I was, you know, as much as I'd like to get to the clown porn today, I just think we have to. This is the thing. Here's the thing. But tomorrow we have Anna Griffin in, and
no,
you know, then she's very professional.
And the last time she was here, it was just like penis all
yeah.
the time. And we've got to stop that.
And she's, you know, she's an actual journalist. I mean, that's the thing. It's like she's an actual real. I mean, not that you're not.
No, but she comes in and she wears these nice sweater vests and she looks all well put together and nice. She's very polite and she's very nice to us and she's very tolerant of us.
And I want to be like, hey, look at this clown porn I got.
Yeah.
So we either have to do this before she comes in, which might be the better way to go around.
We could do it first thing when we get in. We get it all queued up and then watch it before she comes in.
All right. We really ought to have a webcam or something set up so that people can watch the clown porn with us. I could probably get that going by tomorrow. I'm just saying.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
Well, I mean,
I don't think we should be broadcasting porn.
I don't really.
Considering you won't even let us swear. You won't even, like, use the non-censored version of the Team America song.
That's true.
And you want to, like, broadcast clown porn via webcam.
I think you see the difference, though.
I don't think you've thought this through.
No, I really haven't. I'm just saying, this is one of those things.
And all of a sudden, people are popping up in the text box going, I know how to do that. I can help you set that up.
See?
I know how to do, I can fix that up for you.
This is the audience to have, really, if your goal is to do a closed-circuit clown porn broadcast of any size at all. Well, let's do it at the top of tomorrow's show, A, so we can get it done before Anna Griffin gets here so she's not horrified and sickened like more. And also just
because... Plus, you'll have someone to talk to if I just, like, faint or run away.
If you go into a catatonic coma.
If I go lock myself in the bathroom and won't come out.
So if you are enjoying today's broadcast, A, that says something about you, good, bad, or just odd, I don't really know. B, you have many folks to thank, including Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. Now, I will be the first to admit that maybe you're a very tidy person. Maybe you actually keep your house both span and spick. Maybe you are cleaning it top to bottom 5 days a week. Doesn't matter. Inevitably, though, eventually, there will come a time when you will spill something, somebody else will spill something, you have somebody house-sitting, there's the babysitter, or some guy is at your house, and he's there, and he's like hooking up the cable, or he's like moving a piece of furniture in or something, and then, bam, thing of prune juice goes right into the carpet. And then it's like, and then it's all ruined. The whole thing is just torn asunder. All your plans of cleanliness gone so awry. At that time, you will want to have this phone number written down. It's 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. That is the number from Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution. And we always talk about the carpet because that's the thing that's the hardest to clean. But sometimes you get like the tile or you get the hardwood tiles that are put down, you know, the squares of hardwood that go on maybe your foyer or your entranceway in your house. And especially down between there, if you get like the caulking or the mortar or something, that cracks and then it'll mildew, especially if it's in the bathroom or whatever. It's like you basically get in there with like some Comet and a toothpick and just block out like a month of your life to do nothing but clean between tiles. I mean, you've got better things to do. He does not, by definition, because this is what he does. 971-533-3211. Write it down now or loathe this moment later. Lament your horrific failure to note the phone number. It's 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution. Again, Dawn Taylor's going to be hearable. At Ham-Fisted Radio, that is at pdx.fm at 4 o'clock, and you can get it later at hamfistedradio.com if you want. Before we wrap everything up, I promised to play this just so we can kind of get this done. Let's see. You had mentioned yesterday in the top five that Crispin Glover put out a record on which he covered one of the songs by Charles Manson.
Yes.
And I said that I had, unsurprisingly, I had that Charles Manson. I had not just the single, I had the whole album at home, which is called The Love and Terror Cult. And it features the song called I'll Never Say Never to Always, which is the creepiest and catchiest of all of Charles Manson's compositions, even counting that one that the Beach Boys covered. We actually did a top five, I think, one time. It was like songs that wouldn't exist without Charles Manson, and because there's been several songs about him. But then there's the song that Guns N' Roses covered, which is a Manson song, and then the Beach Boys covered a Manson song in like 70... Five, I think. It was called Cease to Exist. I think they called it. So I think they retitled it, which, by the way, was proof, that you don't want to screw with a guy like Charles Manson, because he was like hanging out with the Beach Boys and he was like living with Dennis Wilson and they were all like having parties together and he gave them a bunch of songs. And then they changed like one word in the title to one of his songs. And he's like, that's it. Helter Skelter's coming down. And it's like they found this death list at his house. It was like on list, kill Beach Boys. So... this is another one of those compositions. This is being performed by the Manson Girls. This is called I'll Never Say Never to Always. And I said it was sort of like that song in The Birds that is playing while Suzanne Plachette is sitting by the playground. Let's see if I just...
Always is always forever, 'cause one is one is one. Inside yourself for your father, all is none, all is none, all is one. Time to talk, I'm from behind you. The illusion has been just a dream. Valley of death and I'll find you. Now is when all the sunshine beams. So bring only your perfection, for there must will surely be. No cold pain, fear, no hunger. You can't see, you can't see, you can't see.
The best part is the baby sort of gurgling away in the background. So
that wasn't creepy at all.
Maybe that'll be your ringtone, Don. I've been looking for we have not yet done the inevitable program where I just spend 2 hours trying to figure out how to assign ringtones to everybody and what those songs will be. Because right now, everybody just gets the Arrested Development theme. It's just like the one-size-fits-all.
I have a feeling once I get this iPhone, I will be capturing sounds from Circus of Sex.
Yes.
To use for my ringtones.
Yes, you will. All right.
Squeeze the red nose. Squeeze it.
Jesus.
You like my giant shoes?
Your father is supposed to protect you, not you.
Let's end this now. We want to thank our guest, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Join us tomorrow, and our guests will include Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and Friday, Dan Clark, talking about Pirate Fest.
By the way, someone in the text box asked, why is Pirate Festival cool, but Renaissance Fair is something uncool and dorky and to be made sport of?
Are you asking me personally?
I believe he was aiming that at you personally.
Well, I'd say it has to do with the violating of wenches, you know, which that happens to a more prominent degree at your pirate festival. Also, beheadings and the walkings of the plank. Mm. At the Ren Fair, it's just like a bunch of twirling around a maypole and playing human chess, right? I mean,
wow, no.
I mean, it's just, no. You know, and then those guys from the SCA like hitting each other with big Nerf pens.
No, Renaissance Fair people hate the SCA people. And vice versa, because
does this mean that there can be some? Wait a minute. So, because the only Renaissance fairs I've been to, the SCA was there.
Well, that must be like your crappy Oregon.
But the SCA is a society for creative anachronism. It's these guys who do like sort of medieval style combat, but they're pussies because they wear like pads.
In your big original Renaissance fair in Southern California and in Northern California, no, there's like a blood feud between the Renaissance fair people who were all about historical accuracy and the Society for Creative Anachronism people who are all about like doing their own thing and using foam rubber bats, who think that the Renaissance people all have like a stick up their butt.
Every time I go to a Renaissance fair, they're just trying to sell me licorice whips at a kiosk somewhere. So, I mean, unless that's a thing that they did in olden times with a Y, I don't know. Well, that might actually get me to go if there was some sort of like a blood scripts thing going on between the Ren Fair, the SCA, which just screams to be made into a film, I think. The Pirate Festival seems to be a thing that it tends a little bit more toward at least implied violence, which is always the way to my heart. I would say that they all pale compared to the zombie walk. I mean, that's just, I'm saying for me personally. But also, Dan's a good guy. And here's the thing about Dan Clark. Is that I think he'll be able to tell us a little bit about the, and we got to wrap this up, but, Things from Another World, who is one of the fine advertisers on Outlook Portland and on the CW, they just filmed a new television commercial. You know, it was that TV spot, it was like me and Aaron, where I'm looking all awkward, like, hello, sir, I'm here to buy this Arkham Asylum action figure, can you please, whatever. They just replaced that with a new spot that I don't think is done, I think it's airing. I don't even know that I should give it away, but I will say that the pirate guys are involved in it, and I saw some of the outtakes, and it's just like it really is going to be the best commercial Portland has ever seen. It's like way better than that Scott Thomason thing from a couple years ago where he got Nancy Tonya Harding. I mean,
it can't be better than the Trunk Monkey.
I've seen the rough cut. All right, I'm just saying it's pretty fantastic. So he can tell us all about that. All right, I want to thank Charles, who sent us the clown porn, by the way. And tomorrow I'm going to try to rustle up some of those cracked pepper and olive oil Triscuits that I haven't eaten.
No, Friday. Wait till Friday. We'll do a whole thing on Friday where we each bring in a couple of favorite snack foods,
right.
we will share.
Then we got to have the pub cheese. I mean, there's like we absolutely require that. Yeah. All right, so thank you all. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's installment of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Dawn Taylor can be heard at hamfistedradio.com anytime, day or night, doing her program, which also airs this afternoon on PDX.FM. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor, executive producer Bruce Agler, advanced technology and magic brought to you by Thomas Gill, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kenakoa. It is Wednesday, September 15th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. Thanks for listening. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.